Chapter 4. Nightfall. Gowan watched the sun burn the clouds to death in the west, the final light fading. That haze of perpetual gloom kept the sun itself shrouded, just as it hid the stars from his sight at night. Today the clouds were unnaturally high in the air. Often Dragon Mount's tip would be hidden on cloudy days, but this thick gray haze hovered high enough that most of the time it barely brushed the mountain's jagged broken tip. "Let's engage them," Jizau whispered from where he crouched beside Gowan on the hilltop. Gowan glanced away from the sunset, back toward the small village below. It should have been still, save perhaps for a goodman checking on his livestock one last time before turning in. It should have been dim, unlit, save for a few tallow candles burning in windows as people finished evening meals. But it was not dim. It was not quiet. The village was alight with angry torches carried by a dozen sturdy figures. By that torchlight and the light of the dying sun, Gowan could make out that each was wearing a nondescript uniform of brown and black. Gowan couldn't see the three-starred insignia on their uniforms, but he knew it was there. From his distant vantage, Gowan watched a few latecomers stumble from their homes, looking frightened and worried as they gathered with the others in the crowded square. These villagers welcomed the armed force with reluctance. Women clutched children, men were careful to keep their eyes downcast. "We don't want trouble," the postures said. They'd undoubtedly heard from other villages that these invaders were orderly. The soldiers paid for goods they took, and no young men were pressed into service, though they weren't turned away either. A very odd invading army indeed. However, Gowan knew what the people would think. This army was led by Aes Sedai, and who could say what was odd or normal when Aes Sedai were involved? There were no sisters with this particular patrol, thank the light. The soldiers, polite but stern, lined up the villagers and looked them over. Then a pair of soldiers entered each house and barn, inspecting it. Nothing was taken and nothing was broken. All very neat and cordial. Gowan could almost hear the officer offering apologies to the village mayor.
"Gowan?" Jizau asked. "I count barely a dozen of them. If we send Roddick's squad to come in from the north, we'll cut off both sides and smash them between us. It's getting dark enough that they won't see us coming. We could take them without so much as running up a ladder."
"And the villagers?" Gowan asked. "There are children down there."
"That hasn't stopped us other times."
"Those times were different," Gowan said, shaking his head. "The last three villages they've searched point a direct line toward Dorlan. If this group vanishes, the next one will wonder what it was they nearly uncovered. We draw the entire army's eye in this direction."
"But..."
"No," Gowan said softly. "We have to know when to fall back, Jizau."
"So we came all this way for nothing?"
"We came all this way for an opportunity," Gowan said, backing away from the hilltop, making certain he didn't show a profile on the horizon. "And now that I've inspected that opportunity, we are not going to take it. Only a fool looses his arrow just because he's got a bird in front of him."
"Why wouldn't you loose it if it's right there in front of you?" Jizau asked as he joined Gowan.
"Because sometimes the prize isn't worth the arrow," Gowan said. "Come on." Below, waiting in the dark with lanterns hooded, were some of the very men the soldiers in the village were searching for. Gareth Bryn must have been very displeased to learn there was a harrying force hiding somewhere nearby. He'd been diligent in trying to flush it out, but the countryside near Tarvalen was liberally sprinkled with villages, forests, and secluded valleys that could hide a small mobile strike force. So far, Gowan had managed to keep his younglings out of sight while pulling off the occasional raid or ambush on Bryn's forces. There was only so much you could do with 300 men, however, particularly when you faced one of the five great captains.
"Am I destined to end up fighting against each and every man who has been a mentor to me?"
Gowan took the reins of his horse and gave a silent order to withdraw by raising his right hand, then gestured sharply away from the village. The men moved without comment, dismounting and leading their mounts for both stealth and safety. Gawain had thought he was over Hamar and Cullen's deaths. Bryn himself had taught Gawain that the battlefield sometimes made allies into sudden foes. Gawain had fought his former teachers, and Gawain had won. That was the end of it. Recently, however, his mind seemed determined to dredge up those corpses and carry them about. Why now, after so long? He suspected his sense of guilt had to do with facing Bryn, his first and most influential instructor in the arts of war. Gawain shook his head as he guided Challenge across the darkening landscape. He kept his men away from the road in case Bryn's scouts had placed watchers. The 50 men around Gawain walked as quietly as possible, the horses' hoofbeats deadened by the springy earth. If Bryn had been shocked to discover a harrying force striking at his outriders, then Gawain had been equally shocked to discover those three stars on the uniforms of the men he slew. How had the White Tower's enemies recruited the greatest military mind in all of Andor? And what was the Captain General of the Queen's Guard doing fighting with a group of Aes Sedai rebels in the first place? He should have been in Camelon protecting Elaine. Light send that Elaine had arrived in Andor. She couldn't still be with the rebels. Not with her homeland lacking a queen. Her duty to Andor outweighed her duty to the White Tower. And what of your duty, Gawain Trakand? He thought to himself. He wasn't certain he had duty or honor left to him. Perhaps his guilt about Hamar, his nightmares of war and death at Dumai's Wells, were due to the slow realization that he might have given his allegiance to the wrong side. His loyalty belonged to Elaine and Egwene. What then was he still doing fighting a battle he didn't care about, helping a side that, by all accounts, was opposed to the one Elaine and Egwene had chosen? They're just accepted, he told himself. Elaine and Egwene didn't choose this side. They are just doing what they've been ordered to do. But the things that Egwene had said to him all those months ago, back in Cairhien, suggested that she had made her decision willingly. She had chosen a side. Hamar had chosen a side. Garth Bryn had, apparently, chosen a side. But Gawain continued to want to be on both sides. The division was ripping him apart. An hour out of the village, Gawain gave the order to mount and take to the road. Hopefully, Bryn's scouts wouldn't think to search the land outside the village. If they did, the tracks of 50 horsemen would be hard to miss. There was no avoiding that. The best thing now was to reach firm ground where the signs of their passing would be hidden by 1,000 years of footfalls and traffic. 2 pairs of soldiers rode off in front and 2 pairs hung back to watch. The rest maintained their silence, though their horses now pounded a thunderous gallop. None asked why they were withdrawing, but Gawain knew that they were wondering, just as Jizao had. They were good men, perhaps too good. As they rode, Rajar pulled his mount up beside Gawain's. Just a few months ago, Rajar had been a youth. But now Gawain couldn't think of him as anything other than a soldier, a veteran. Some men gained experience through years spent living. Other men gained experience through months spent watching their friends die. Glancing upward, Gawain missed the stars. They hid their faces from him behind those clouds, like Aiel behind black veils. "Where did we go wrong, Rajar?" Gawain asked as they rode. "Wrong, Lord Gawain?" Rajar asked. "I don't know that we did anything wrong. We couldn't have known which villages that patrol would choose to inspect, or that they wouldn't turn along the old wagon right road as you had hoped. Some of the men may be confused, but it was right to withdraw." "I wasn't talking about the raid," Gawain said, shaking his head. "I'm talking about this whole bloody situation. You shouldn't have to go on supply raids or spend your time killing scouts. You should have become a warder to some freshly minted Aes Sedai by now. And I should be back in Camelon with Elaine." "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills," the shorter man said. "Well, it wove us into a hole," Gawain muttered, glancing at the overcast sky once again. "And Elida doesn't seem too eager to pull us out of it." Rajar looked at Gawain reproachfully. The White Tower's methods are its own, Lord Gawain, and so are its motives. It isn't for us to question. What good is a warder who questions the order of his Aes Sedai? A good way to get both of you killed, that is.
You're not a warder, Rajar. That's the problem.
Gawain said nothing. None of the other younglings seemed to be plagued with these questions. To them, the world was much simpler. One did as the White Tower and the Ammerlin Seat commanded. Never mind if those commands seemed designed to get you killed. 300 youths against a force of over 50,000 hardened soldiers commanded by Gareth Bryn himself? Will of the Ammerlin or not, that was a death trap. The only reason the younglings had survived as long as they had was because of Gawain's familiarity with his teacher's ways. He knew where Bryn would send patrols and outriding scouts, and knew how to evade his search patterns. It was still a futile effort. Gawain didn't have nearly the troops needed for a true harrying force, particularly with Bryn entrenched in his siege. Beyond that, there was the remarkable matter of the army's complete lack of a supply line. How were they getting food? They purchased supplies from the surrounding villages, but not nearly enough to feed themselves. How could they possibly have carried all they needed while still moving quickly enough to appear without warning in the middle of winter? Gawain's attacks were next to meaningless. It was enough to make a man think that the Ammerlin just wanted him and the other younglings out of the way. Before Demise Wells, Gawain had suspected that was the case. Now he was growing certain. "And yet you continue to follow her orders," he thought to himself. He shook his head. Bryn's scouts were getting dangerously close to his base of operations, and Gawain couldn't risk killing any more of them without giving himself away. It was time to head back to Dorlan. Perhaps the Aes Sedai there would have a suggestion on how to proceed. He hunkered down on his horse and continued riding into the night.
"Light, I wish I could see the stars," he thought.